Hi guys, this is Candy, and today I would like to take you on my investigation into the disappearance of Emma Philpott through this podcast. So it happened in 2012. Emma Philpott was 26 years old at the time of her disappearance, and she was working at Redfish Bluefish, which was a popular restaurant in Victoria, BC, Canada. On November 28, 2012, Emma was last seen in front of the Fairmont Empress Hotel in downtown Victoria, sometime between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m. Emma was standing barefoot on the streets in temperatures hovering just above 0 degrees. At 7:11 p.m., before her disappearance, a 911 call went out to the police by a concerned passerby who happened to be an acquaintance of Emma. After the call, two Victoria police officers were dispatched to check in on her. After more than 40 minutes of talking with her, they decided that she was not a threat to herself or anyone else. The police left, and that was when Emma was last seen. Like any mystery, there is a plethora of clues and details that one could overlook. Backtracking a little, here are some of the events that led to Emma's disappearance, and hopefully they will help provide a clearer picture. Days before Emma's disappearance, those who knew Emma claimed that she was acting strange, that it looked like she was struggling with some sort of health issues, a mental health crisis. 8 days before she was gone, on Tuesday, November 20th, surveillance footage captured her at the YMCA near downtown Victoria, entering and exiting the building several times. Her behavior appeared to indicate that she thought she might have been followed. On Friday, November 23rd, Emma called Shelley, her mother, in tears around midnight, saying that she wants to come home, and urged her mother to book a flight to Victoria. The next day, Emma calls her mom back, telling her to not come out and she will figure things out on her own. This back and forth repeated for a couple of times, and the day before her disappearance, Shelley called a number from which Emma phoned her the night before, and someone from the women's shelter that Emma was staying at picked up, which surprised Shelley because she never knew that Emma was staying at a shelter. When Emma told Shelley not to come out again that night, Shelley decided enough was enough and that she needed to come out and see her daughter. The events that followed were a bit strange. On the same day of her disappearance, Emma purchased a $200 prepaid credit card and a prepaid cell phone from a 7-Eleven in downtown Victoria. Shortly after, she got into a cab and asked to be taken to the airport, but when the driver told her how much the fare would cost, which is around $60, she said that's too much, which was odd because she was believed to have about $2,000 to $3,000 in one of her bank accounts. Later, Shelley arrived in Victoria right after Emma's disappearance, and Emma was declared as a missing person. Then the investigative process began. The police searched Emma's van and found some of her most valuable possessions, including a laptop, journals, camera, and passport. The police department, using a dive team, searched the waters of the Inner Harbor in Victoria. Shelley formed also a search party of volunteers to look for Emma. They scattered the streets of Victoria, hoping for any signs of her. Then Shelley and the Help Find Emma volunteers expanded the search, traveling to parts of Vancouver Island, the mainland, and the Gulf Islands trying to look for leads. But every tip they got turned out to be a dead end. But then some other unconfirmed sightings of her along the harbor, it seems like that she has disappeared without a trace. It is a very, very difficult case to work as there are so many possibilities. And this is a comment by Jasper Smith, a private investigator who worked on Emma's case. However, there are still some potential suspects that people came up with. A year and a half passed, which it was in May of 2014. A man walked into a store in Gastown, in the Gastown neighborhood of Vancouver with a crumbled up poster of Emma. He claimed that Emma is his girlfriend and that she wanted to be left alone. The man is seen in the civilian's footage wearing a green shirt, has multiple tattoos on his arms, and walks with a noticeable limp. The store owners called 911 immediately, but Shelley said that the police didn't show up until the following day to take a report, which is a huge flaw in the investigative process by the police. And to today, the man has never been publicly identified, and it is one of the potential suspects surrounding Emma's disappearance. Another suspect is Emma's acquaintance, Julian Hurd. It is suspected that Emma was the victim of foul play. Julian and Emma met in Perth, Australia prior to Emma moving to Victoria. They formed a friendship and then Julian developed a crush on Emma, but the feelings were mutual. Sometimes after Emma moved to Victoria, Julian also decided to move to Victoria. He outlined quite extensively his reasoning for the move when he was being questioned, and it appeared to be one giant coincidence. Although some people remain suspicious of his action, given the timing of his move and his feeling for Emma, it is completely reasonable for him to remain as one of the potential suspects for the case. Before I launch into the rationale as to why the case is still not solved, I would just like to bring up some other evidence that I think is pertinent to the case. Then, on the morning of December 15th, 2012, a couple days after Emma's disappearance, the prepaid credit card that she purchased at a 7-Eleven was flagged for use at a gas station near Juan de Fuca Recreation Center. The man who found the car was questioned by the police, but ultimately was let go. This same man later contacted Shelley, which is Emma's mom, on multiple occasions and told her that he's not sure where he found the car, but the police told him that he found the car at the recreation center. He also told Shelley that he is an alcoholic. And some other theories around this case suggest that Emma disappeared into thin air to pursue her desire for a recluse lifestyle. However, Shelley claims that Emma is very close to her family, especially her brother Alexander, so she couldn't have possibly done that. Again, the reason why this case is so hard to be solved is because there are so many possibilities. Gary Gray, a professor of sociology and criminology at the University of Victoria, and his colleague have written up a paper that explores crowdsourcing criminology with its relationship to the news, using Emma's case as a case study. As a part of the paper, Gary and a team of his students explore three different geographical possibilities of how Emma could have traveled from the Empress Hotel downtown, where she was last seen, to Juan de Fuca Recreation Center, where the prepaid credit card was allegedly found. They split up into three groups. One took a car from the area, another group took a bus, and the third walked. The groups concluded that the possibilities of where Emma went or was taken was very, very broad. Given the amount of roads, bus routes, and walking trails, there seemed to be an inordinate amount of directions where Emma could have been headed. However, it is also worth noting to point out that what has made Emma's case so different is the amount of media attention that he has received. It has been covered very extensively in newspaper articles, podcasts, and such. However, not all of the press attention is positive. For instance, Shelley has been received some negative press. Her and her son, Matt, were arrested on charges related to drugs and weapon offenses. Although the charges were eventually dropped against her, the negative attention of them might have distracted from the search for Emma.